disgraceful. She shook her head, plucked a cloth from the mirror, and wiped the blood from her hands. I suppose that is what I get for relying on outside help. If you want something done right. Picking up the knife, she regarded her reflection in the surface. As Suki watched, mystified, the woman lowered the blade to the inside of her arm, then cut a short, straight gash along her skin. Blood welled and bubbled from the cut, and Satomi began chanting in a low, hypnotic voice. Suki felt the whisper of some terrible power go through the air, and trembled in an effort not to flee the room. On Satomi's raised arm, the line of blood swelled, congealed, and became solid. Dozens of legs wriggled, and the long, segmented body of a centipede emerged from the blood and began crawling up her arm. Satomi smiled. Reaching down, she plucked the monstrous insect from her skin and held it between two fingernails as it writhed and coiled in her grasp. "Go," she whispered to it. "Find the demon slayer and the fox. Kill them both. Feast on their insides and return to me with the scroll. I will be waiting." She tossed the centipede to the floor, where it landed with an audible thump. As soon as it hit the ground, it scuttled across the room on hooked yellow legs, squeezed through a crack in the boards, and vanished. Lowering her arm, ignoring the blood that dripped to the floor, Satomi nodded in satisfaction. "Well, that should take care of it," she murmured to herself. "The demon slayer has become quite troublesome, but once he is dead, this piece of the scroll will be mine." She sighed, as if wearied by the amount of work still left to do. "Now I must write an invitation to the palace and find someone halfway competent to deliver it to the Hayate Shrine. That useless new girl should be able to manage that, at least." She glanced down at herself, as if realizing for the first time she and her magnificent rose were covered in blood that stained the silk and was still running down her arm. "Such a messy business," she sighed. "And trying enough without being spied upon. Are you getting a good look, little spirit, or whoever is haunting this castle? I can feel you watching me, you know. You're not terribly subtle." Suki jolted back, flaring into existence, and Satomi turned to her with a smile. "There you are. Well, well, still hanging around, Suki-chan?" the woman mocked, as Suki floated there, stunned. Satomi chuckled, shaking her head. "Poor lost lingering soul. Too weak and frightened to even come back as a grudge spirit. How very pathetic. But you are of no importance to me anymore." Suki clenched her ghostly fists, wishing she could do something. Anything. Even pick up the dead crow's head and hurl it at the evil woman. Satomi chuckled again, then bent to grab the bloody cloth from the table. "If you wish to haunt me, little soul," the woman crooned as she wiped her arm clean, "you go right ahead. But if you become annoying, or if you get in my way, I know a few blood priestesses and onmyoji who would be happy to bind your spirit to a wall scroll. Or the mirror. Or perhaps stuff you into a monkey." Her lips curled even further, showing teeth as she stepped forward. "Would you like to be a monkey, Suki-chan? Personally, I think it would be an improvement, don't you? Catch!" She hurled the bloody cloth at Suki's face. Instinctively, Suki jerked back, throwing up her arms to shield herself. The rag passed right through her arms and face and struck the wall behind her, and Suki felt her body shiver like mist in response. With a soundless cry, the distraught ghost turned and fled, vanishing through the walls of the castle, hearing Satomi's cruel laughter follow her as she did.
21. The Legend of Oni no Mikoto. I think we crossed the border, Kage-san,
the ronin announced, shading his eyes as he gazed down the hill with Yumeko.
I'm pretty certain we're in Taiyo lands now. The capital shouldn't be far.
Standing in the shade of a ginkgo tree, I gazed down at the sweeping vista before us and concluded that he was right. These were definitely the lands of the Sun Clan. We had crossed into the territory of the Taiyo. While not as martially powerful as the Fire Clan, or as numerously large as the Earth Clan, the Taiyo were perhaps the most influential of all the great clans, for they made up the imperial family. They ruled the capital city of King Heigen-toshi, and as far back as history could remember, the emperor or empress had always been part of the Sun Clan. The silvery glint of a river snaking through the valley toward the distant peaks caught my eye.
There's the Hotarugawa, I said.
If we follow it north, it will lead to the capital.
Yep, and we got here without having to pass through the border checkpoint, which would have been a pain in the ass.
The ronin grinned back at me.
See? It all worked out, Kage-san. A dog always finds its way.
I didn't answer. The ronin had kept his word and had led us through the mountains, but he was also responsible for getting us lost in the first place. Still, I could admit he had proven useful in the Gaki village. His skill as a warrior had certainly helped in the last battle, even if it wasn't with a sword. And we had avoided the checkpoint, though I would need to be careful of any imperial magistrates or guards who might demand to see my travel papers. At best, depending on the circumstances, I would have to pay a hefty fine for traveling through another clan's territory without proper documentation. At worst, I would be imprisoned and executed, my clan shamed and dishonor brought to my family. Yumeko would be fine. No one paid attention to peasant girls, and ronin were rarely given a second glance. But I was a Kage samurai, or at least I looked the part, and samurai were treated with caution in territories not their own, especially if that samurai was part of the Shadow Clan.
It's been a while since I've been to the capital,
the ronin stated, his gaze following the river through the valley.
It'll be nice to relax, get a halfway decent meal, and then maybe I can convince you to have some fun for a change, Kage-san.
He gave me that defiant grin.
I take it you've never played Chohan before?
Chohan was a dice game popular in all of Iwagoto's gambling dens, which were rough, seedy places frequented by bandits, ronin, gang members, and crime lords. My missions for the Shadow Clan sometimes took me into the darkest of these underworlds, chasing down demons, hiding among killers. But reputable samurai rarely ventured into such places, and those that did never admitted to it.
Nope,
I said.
No, you've never played it, or no, I can't convince you to try.
Take your pick.
Ah, well, you're lost, samurai.
The ronin shook his head and glanced at Yumeko, sitting peacefully under the ginkgo tree.
Maybe Yumeko-chan would be willing to try her hand at it. She can talk to the kami, right? Could she ask Tamafuku, the god of luck, to bless my dice for a round or two?
He was baiting me, and I knew he was baiting me, but anger flickered all the same. I knew what kind of humans filled those gambling halls. Predators with hungry eyes and bloodthirsty smiles. The thought of Yumeko surrounded by a circle of human wolves, their ravenous eyes watching her every move, filled me with a cold fury I did not understand.
Tamafuku?
Sitting in the grass, Yumeko cocked her head, and the cricket that had been perched on her elbow sprang away into the grass.
Well, I could try, she said. I've never spoken to any of the great kami before, just the minor ones. Do you know where we can find Tamafuku so I could talk to him?
Well, there is a giant statue of him just inside the gambling hall,
the ronin said.
Oh, does he live inside the statue then? Do you think it gets up and moves around when no one is looking? There was a teapot in the Silent Winds Temple that did that sometimes, until the day Nitoru kicked it across the room.
Never mind, the Ronin sighed. Forget I said anything.
With a yawn, the girl rose, stretching both arms over her head.
At least we're almost to the capital,
she mused, gazing down the valley.
What I'm hoping for is an inn with good food and soft futons. It will be nice to sleep on a bed for a change and not out in the open, or in a leaky hut, or in a cave with a very uncomfortable stone floor.
Her dark gaze slid to me, the smile growing wider.
Unlike certain samurai who will remain nameless, most of us cannot fall asleep wherever we want.
I masked a frown, confused. I could never sleep as she did. Stretched out and prone, easy prey for someone to cut off my head or tear me apart. Sleep for me came in snatches, in an upright position with my back to the wall and kamigoroshi in my lap, ready to be drawn in a blink. Comfort had nothing to do with it. The ronin pulled his sake jug around to his front.
We're still a few days out from the capital, if I had to guess,
he remarked, pulling the top off the gourd.
But there should be a couple towns between here and Kinhig and Toshi. I think Yashigi is just up the river.
He lifted the jug toward his lips, but then gave a yelp and yanked it away from his face.
Kso!
My hand dropped to my sword, and Yumiko blinked at him in shock.
What's wrong, Okame-san?
There's a frog in my sake!
The ronin sputtered, sounding outraged and horrified. He tilted the gourd upside down, shook it twice, and a tiny green creature tumbled into the grass with the rest of the liquid. Yumiko burst out laughing. Her voice was like tiny birds, and sent a strange prickle over my skin.
Oh, don't be upset, Okame-san, she said,
as the ronin stared mournfully at the empty jug, as if hoping it would refill.
Frogs are good luck, after all. You must be blessed by the kami.
Not from where I'm standing, unless they've decided to bless me with soberness, which they can keep to themselves, thank you very much.
I glanced at the place the frog had fallen, but could no longer see it in the grass. Only a bright green juniper leaf skipping across the ground, being blown by the wind. The ronin gave a heavy sigh and hung the gourd around his neck.
Well, shall we get going? He muttered. I'm going to need a lot more sake if I'm going to keep traveling with a pair of you.
We reached Yashigi just as the sun was going down, casting long shadows over the valley and turning the river the color of blood. The long wooden bridge over the Hotarugawa teemed with people entering and leaving town, merchants with carts, ronin, peasants, a few mounted samurai, all mingled together, hooves, wheels, and sandaled feet thumping and groaning as they crossed.
So many people! Yumiko murmured,
gazing around with wide eyes.
Even more than Chochinmachi. I've never seen so many people in one place.
Beside her, the ronin chuckled.
This is nothing, Yumiko-chan, he told her. Just wait till you see the capital.
An imperial magistrate, flanked by two mounted guards, clopped down the center of the bridge on horseback, parting the crowds before them like waves. Discreetly, I moved to the side of the road, keeping my gaze averted and blending into the passers-by. The magistrate and his guards passed without pause and continued across the bridge, though I did notice the ronin eyeing me with suspicion when they were out of sight. Across the bridge, a wide main road cut through the center of town, branching into dozens of side streets. Rows of wooden buildings with blue-tiled overhangs lined the sidewalks, rectangular cloth signs fluttering in the breeze. Despite the fading light, people still milled about the streets. Women in kimonos, samurai sauntering through the crowds, merchants standing outside their businesses, enticing customers to enter. A tofu seller jogged past us, two large wooden buckets balanced from a pole on his shoulder. A trio of boys clustered around a stall selling cooked eel, watching as the vendor pulled live eels out of a barrel, drove a nail through their gills to fillet them, and placed the skewers on the grill. As they'd been in Chochinmachi, Yumiko's eyes were wide, her gaze never still as she took everything in. As we moved down the sidewalks, the Ronin was all too happy to point things out and to offer an explanation on whatever questions she had. I said nothing as we wove through the foot traffic, keeping a firm hand on Kamigoroshi and scanning the crowds for danger. The girl and the Ronin remained oblivious, but I had felt eyes on us the moment we crossed the bridge. There was no doubt in my mind we were being watched.
"Man, I'm starving,"
the Ronin stated, pausing at the entrance of a restaurant, blue curtains hanging over the door. A fat tanuki statue wearing a straw hat and clutching a sake bottle stood beside the entrance, beckoning travelers inside.
"What do you think, Yumeko-chan?"
Yumeko blinked at the statue and crossed her arms.
"I don't think this is a proper representation," she stated in a serious voice. "I've never known any tanuki to have that big a scrotum."
The Ronin made a spitting noise and turned away, coughing and beating his chest. "He means food, Yumeko," I explained, as the Ronin gasped and waved his hand at us in agreement, leaning against the wall. "This is a restaurant, if you want to get something to eat."
"Oh," Yumeko said and frowned. "Well, of course, I'm fairly hungry myself, though I still think the statue is all wrong."
She sniffed and passed it by, wrinkling her nose.
"How would one even walk with those dragging along the ground? I would think they'd get horribly chafed."
I managed not to wince as I followed her through the door, but just barely.
"Welcome, sir, welcome,"
the host greeted as we came into the room. Though I brought up the rear, he looked only at me, ignoring the Ronin and Yumeko entirely.
"Will you be dining with us tonight?"
"Three of us," I told him, earning a brief, puzzled look as he glanced at my companions. It wasn't every day a samurai sat down to eat with a Ronin and a peasant girl. Under my flat stare, however, he quickly bowed and ushered us to a low table in the corner. After explaining that our waitress would be right over, he bowed once more and left. A young woman arrived soon after, and both Yumeko and the Ronin enthusiastically placed their orders while I tried not to think of how this would deplete the last of my coin. After the waitress left, I poured myself a cup of tea and quietly nursed my drink, listening to the murmur of voices around us.
"They say Oni no Mikoto has appeared again,"
the man at the table behind us muttered.
"The demon prince?" said his companion. "Kami preserve us. Where was he seen this time?"
"Omachi, on the bridge outside town. Two Ronin were traveling together, and he challenged the stronger of them to a duel."
A pause, and then he added in a hushed voice,
"The survivor said he'd never seen anyone move so fast."
"That's because Oni no Mikoto isn't a man,"
said his companion gravely.
"Well, this will stir up a hornet's nest, as all the fools who think their warriors will be off looking for a fight, hoping the demon prince finds them worthy enough to challenge."
"Baka,"
the man snorted.
"Worthy enough to kill, more likely."
The waitress returned, setting a tray before us. It held an assortment of dishes, cooked meat, vegetables, and three bowls of rice.
"Is there anything else I can get you?"
she asked, as the Ronin immediately grabbed a chicken strip with his chopsticks and shoved it into his mouth. Politely, she didn't seem to notice.
"I have a question," Yumeko said, as the Ronin continued to pick food off the tray. "Who is Oni no Mikoto? Is he really a prince of demons? I have trouble believing there is an Oni wandering around the valley, challenging people to duels. Wouldn't people notice that?"
So, she had been listening too. Somehow, I wasn't surprised. The waitress's eyes widened a bit, and she dropped her voice.
"Oni no Mikoto?"
she whispered in a dramatic voice, as if this was not the first time she had spoken about him.
"He's become our most famous local legend. They say on moonlit nights, a lone swordsman will sometimes appear on the bridges around the area, blocking the way forward. He had the body of an angel and the face of a demon, and will not allow anyone to cross the bridge unless they defeat him in a duel. But he shows himself only to those he finds worthy, the strongest and most skilled warriors in the land. Apparently, his legend has grown beyond the valley, because now we have swordsmen traveling here from all over, hoping to meet Oni no Mikoto on the roads. But in the 3 years since the demon prince first appeared, no one has been able to defeat him. So, she finished, as Yumeko listened in rapt fascination, if you are traveling through the valley and you happen to meet a single swordsman on a lonely moonlit bridge, first, count yourself both lucky and cursed. You are among the few worthy of Oni no Mikoto's attention. Then turn around and walk away. Oni no Mikoto is not a man. He is a demon with a sword, and he will take your head for a prize, as he has done to the countless warriors who came before.
Ah! The Ronin snorted with his mouth full. If it was me, I'd just shoot him.
The waitress looked affronted.
You cannot just shoot Oni no Mikoto.
Nande? Why not?
Because, the waitress sputtered, it's dishonorable.
Bah, I'm no samurai. I don't follow that code of honor anymore.
The ronin picked up a squid and stuffed the whole thing in his mouth.
Some stranger wants to kill me for trying to cross the bridge. He's getting shot between the eyes.
I reached for my rice bowl, but paused, a faint shiver going through my veins. A black paper crane sat on a corner of the tray, almost invisible against the lacquered surface. My heart sank, but I couldn't leave it there. As the waitress sputtered again, I quickly palmed the folded crane and slipped it into my sleeve. The waitress still seemed at a loss for words.
You cannot? That is... how barbaric!
She stepped back, giving the ronin a look of distaste.
Well, you won't even see Oni no Mikoto, she said loftily. Someone like you isn't worthy of his attention.
I hope not, was the reply. I'd lose all respect for this demon prince if he showed up to challenge a filthy ronin dog.
Excuse me. I rose, causing all three to look my way. The ronin frowned, one cheek bulging like a squirrel.
Where are you going, Kage?
I must take care of a small matter. I'll return shortly. Without waiting for an answer, I walked away, feeling Yumeko's eyes on my back as I left. The ronin grunted, muttered something about toilets, and continued eating as I ducked through the curtained doorway into the streets. Outside, the sun had set. Many of the shops had closed their doors, though there were a few stubborn businesses that continued to stay open even after dark. I walked to the edge of the main road and felt the paper crane in my sleeve stir. It slipped out and fluttered away down a narrow side street, becoming lost in the darkness. Setting my jaw, I followed. Jomei was waiting for me in the shadow of a warehouse, his painted face seeming to hover against the black. The paper crane perched on his knee, fanning its wings as if it were truly alive.
You're late.
I bowed so he wouldn't sense my reluctance. Why was I feeling so hesitant tonight? This meeting was the same as all the others. Forgive me, Master Jomei. I was held up. There were complications.
Yes, I saw that.
The mage's voice was faintly amused.
You've picked up quite the party, Tatsumi-san. Now, not only is there a girl, but an uncouth ronin dog following you about. Would you care to explain why you haven't killed him yet, or at least lost him somewhere along the road?
He was part of a bandit gang that ambushed us, I began, but he ended up turning on them instead. Yumeko insisted that we help him after the fight.
The peasant girl told you not to kill the bandit, Jomei said. And you listened to her?
She's my only lead to Master Jiro and the Steel Feather Temple, I replied. If I'd killed the ronin, it might have frightened her or angered her. I couldn't take the risk that she would leave. Jomei pinched the bridge of his nose between thumb and forefinger, briefly closing his eyes.
The girl is becoming more and more problematic, he muttered, and a shiver of unease crept up my spine.
If Jomei thought Yumeko was becoming a danger to the clan, or if he believed she was no longer essential to my mission, he would give the order to have her and the Ronin killed. He might order me to dispose of them both on an isolated stretch of road outside the city. No one would notice or care if a Ronin and a peasant girl suddenly disappeared without a trace. Both of them were dangerously naive, far too trusting of the demon beside them. Oni no Mikoto might be a local legend, but a real demon lurked in their midst, hungering for blood for their very souls. They wouldn't suspect a thing until it appeared and cut them down. If Jomei gave the order to kill both my companions, it would be all too easy to carry it out. And I didn't want to do it. The notion shocked me. I'd never questioned orders before, never faltered in what I had to do. If I was told to cleanse a hamlet because the villagers were using blood magic to summon demons, I would slaughter every man, woman, and child there. If they ordered me to Jigoku to slay Ohakumon, the ruler of hell himself, I would jump into the abyss without a second thought. My life was not my own. As always, duty to the Shadow Clan was everything. "Am I to kill her, Master Jomei?" I asked softly. My stomach tightened, and it was suddenly difficult to breathe. If my orders were to kill Yumeko, so be it. I would carry out my duty, as I'd always done, and I would hope that, somehow, her face would not haunt me for the rest of my life. Jomei sighed. "No," he said, igniting a sudden and unexpected flare of relief. "If she can truly lead you to the scroll, there's no reason to kill her yet. Right now, she is naive and harmless, and the Ronin seems a bumbling fool. Continue traveling with them if you must, as long as they pose no threat to the secrets of the clan." I bowed my head. "As you wish, Master Jomei. When you reach the capital, be sure to check in with Kage Masao in the Shadow Clan district. He'll be expecting you."
"Understood."
"Oh, and here." The shadow mage tossed something at me. I caught it with a clink, a circle of cord strung with copper kairu and a few silver tora. "Your stipend for the month. Since you seem to have an extra mouth to feed, make it last."
"Thank you, Master Jomei."
"Go, then." Jomei waved a hand, dismissing me. "Return to your companions before they grow suspicious of where you are. Remember," he added, as I bowed once more and turned away, "the clan will be watching them, and you, demon slayer, do not give us a reason to act." When I returned to the table in the corner, most of the food was gone. The plates were picked over, with only bones and scraps remaining. Only my bowl of rice sat untouched on the edge, though the Ronin was eyeing it as if contemplating snatching that up as well.
"Sorry, Tatsumi-san,"
Yumeko said as I knelt across from her on the cushion. "I tried to keep Baka Okame from eating everything, but he didn't want to share. We can order more if you like."
"Dogs don't share, Yumeko-chan,"
the Ronin grinned, using a fishbone to pick at his teeth.
"We're horrible gluttons like that. Besides, who wolfed down a dozen fried tofu balls all by herself?"
"Because you had already eaten all the fish, and the chicken, and most of the squid. If I didn't claim something, there would have been nothing left."
"That's not true. I left you the pickled radish."
"I hate pickled radish."
"Well, be faster next time. When it comes to food among thieves, Yumeko-chan, it is every man, woman, and dog for themselves."
I ate my rice in silence.
22. The Eyes of a Dead Crow. "Never taunt a hungry fox," was a saying Master Isao had been unusually fond of. I'd always wondered why, until now. We left Yashigi the next morning and for several miles walked down a meandering dirt road through the fertile valley of the Sun Clan. The mountains remained in the distance as we followed the river past farming communities, temples and shrines, open meadows and dense woodland. The scenery was beautiful, the weather perfect in every way. I was fully enjoying the sights and feel of the sun on my skin. The Ronin seemed less enthusiastic.
Ite,
he grumbled, rubbing the back of his neck as we stopped in the shade of a bamboo grove.
Kuso, my back is sore. That inn must have had the lumpiest futon in the world. It felt like there was a damn pine cone right in the middle of the mattress, but when I pulled it up, there was nothing there.
That's unfortunate, Okame-san, I said. My futon was so comfortable, it was like I was sleeping on clouds. Maybe it was something you ate? He glared at me, suspicion flaring in his dark gaze.
I seem to remember you poking around my corner of the room right before we went to sleep, he said accusingly. You wouldn't have anything to do with my lumpy mattress, would you, Yumeko-chan?
Me? What a wicked thing to imply, Okame-san. I mean, you checked under your futon, right? It's not like I could make a pine cone look like a bit of dust on the floor. I smiled at him sweetly and tossed a pickled plum into my mouth. I was beginning to get the hang of this sarcasm thing. Perhaps all the boiled squid was giving you a stomachache?
Quiet,
Tatsumi growled. Something is watching us. We fell silent. Around us, the woods were still, beams of sunlight slanting through the bamboo. Cicadas droned, and a breeze rustled the stalks, muffling the sound of approach. I didn't sense anything dangerous, but Tatsumi possessed an almost supernatural premonition for things that wished us harm. If he said something was watching us, I believed him.
I don't see anything,
Okame said, just as I spotted what Tatsumi did. Across the road, a large black crow sat hunched atop a tree branch, feathers bristling like quills, beady eyes unblinking as it stared at us. Okame, following my gaze, let out a snort.
Oh, how horrifying. A bird is watching us.
He gasped, putting a hand on his heart.
Watch yourself, Yumeko-chan. It might poop in your hair.
The crow didn't move. It stared at us with intense, sullen hostility, and I felt a shiver creep up my back. I don't like the way it's watching us, I said. It looks angry.
Really? Looks like a bird to me,
the Ronin said. When I didn't answer, he shrugged and unshouldered his longbow.
Here then, I'll fix it.
In one smooth motion, he raised the bow and loosed an arrow at the tree, and the muffled thump of the dart striking home rang out a second later. The crow let out a strangled caw and tumbled from the branch in a flutter of wings and black feathers. As it fell, a strange sensation rippled through the air, a subtle release of power that raised the hair on my arms. All magic had a certain feel, I'd discovered. Fox magic flickered and pulsed like heatless fire. The monk's ki energy tingled like the air before a storm. Tatsumi's shadow magic was almost invisible, but it was still there if you were very observant. It felt like a cool, dark mist settling over your skin. This felt like a million spiders, maggots, and centipedes were wriggling under my clothes. I shuddered, but as quickly as it had come, the feeling faded as the magic scattered to the wind and was gone.
There.
The Ronin shouldered his weapon, seeming oblivious to the strange energy pulse.
Fixed. No more creepy birds. We can go now, right?
Tatsumi sighed.
You might have made it worse.
Resisting the urge to flail my arms to make sure there were no insects in my sleeves, I walked across the road to where the bird had fallen. Circling the trunk, I saw the arrow tip poking up from the weeds and peered down, expecting to see the corpse of a large black crow. A chill went through my stomach. There was no body, not technically. The arrow shaft, jutting up from the dirt, pierced the ribcage of a bleached white skeleton, fragile wing bones crumpled in the grass, surrounded by feathers. The skull lay against a tree root, beak open in a last indignant caw, completely bare of skin. It looked like it had been dead for months, rather than the few seconds it took to cross the road. I swallowed hard, feeling the two boys come up behind me and peer over my shoulder. Okame let out a low curse as I stepped closer to Tatsumi, glancing up at his expression. "That's not normal, is it?" I asked in a small voice. "I'm pretty certain that's not normal." "No," Tatsumi answered, his eyes narrowed to violet slits. "It's blood magic." A shudder went through me. Blood magic. Master Isao had told me about it once as a warning. Unlike normal magic, where it was believed the kami touched were chosen by the gods themselves, blood magic could be performed by nearly anyone, from the lowliest farmer to the highest-ranking magistrate. As its name suggested, blood fueled its power. The more blood spilled, the stronger the spell. It could raise the dead, manipulate emotions, or summon a demon from the depths of Jigoku. But such power came with a hidden, terrible price. Blood magic was the magic of death and corruption, the magic of Jigoku. The more you used it, the more pieces of your soul you gave away, bit by bit, until you were a husk of something that had once been human. Eventually, the practitioner was consumed by the darkness of his own making and became one of Jigoku's own, an oni or other demon, damned to the abyss until the end of time.
Blood magic.
The ronin curled a lip at the pile of feathers and bones at the bottom of the tree.
"Well, that's great. Now I've killed someone's favorite abomination. There's probably a fuming blood mage out there who's making a Wada Ningyo in my image right now."
"Unlikely," Tatsumi said. Wada Ningyo, straw dolls fashioned in the target's image, were a common item for carrying out curses, but they needed a bit of the victim itself, hair, blood, or fingernails, for the ritual to work. Once, when I was younger and angry at being made to repolish the floor in the main hall, I'd used fox magic to make a bit of straw look like a curse doll and hung it outside Denga's quarters. It was hard not to wince at what had come next. That was the one and only time I could remember Master Isao being furious with me. And then I had another thought, one that turned everything inside me to ice. "Someone sent this thing," I said, looking at Tatsumi. "To follow us. Because of the scroll." "Quickly," I added, "because they think we have it, or that we know where it is."
"Wait, what?"
The ronin stared at me like my ears had suddenly appeared.
"Clearly I've missed the first half of this story," he said. "Back up a bit. Who's following us? What's this scroll you keep talking about?"
Tatsumi didn't answer, but I saw him stiffen. Clearly, he did not like talking about the scroll, especially in the company of the ronin. I didn't either. I could feel the scroll case hidden within the Furoshiki, my great, terrible secret. But it made sense. Master Isao had warned that many would be searching for the scroll, armies of men, yokai and demons trying to find it. Ruthless mortals who would stop at nothing to acquire its power. And if that was the case, then... "Whoever is using these dead crows to spy on us," I continued as the realization slowly unfurled like a roll of parchment, "could be behind the attack on the temple. The one who sent the demons to kill everyone and steal the scroll." I gazed at Tatsumi, who still hadn't moved or changed expression. "It's possible, isn't it?" I asked. "Demons wouldn't have any use for the scroll. Someone sent them. A blood mage." "Yes," he admitted at last. "Demons don't just appear in the mortal realm for no reason," he went on, looking reluctant to explain. Either a mortal has been consumed by darkness and has turned into one, or they are summoned from Jigoku using blood magic. Oni, especially, are extremely powerful and almost impossible to control for long. It would take a talented blood mage to summon and bind one to do its bidding, even for a short while.
And now we're talking about Oni, said Okame. Oni, blood mages, and demons. Should I start screaming now, or should I wait till you get to the part with the 80-foot skeleton?
Looking at me, he shook his head.
And here I thought you were a simple and innocent peasant girl, Yumeko-chan. How did you get involved with demons and blood magic?
Well, explain later, Tatsumi said brusquely. We should keep moving. Scanning the road and the surrounding trees, his eyes narrowed. I followed his gaze and saw another crow perched in the branches of a tree, glaring at us. The blood mage knows we're on to him. It's not safe to be out in the open. Hurry. We continued down the road with a bit more urgency. I thought back to the dead crow, to the mysterious blood mage who could be following our movements, and my stomach turned in both fear and anger. Whoever had sent the Amanjaku and the terrible Yaburama knew I had the dragon scroll. They were also responsible for the deaths of Master Isao and everyone in the Silent Winds Temple. I was putting Okame and Tatsumi in danger. There was no doubt that the blood mage would try to take the scroll again. But with every attempt, I might learn a little more about this new enemy. Who he was, what he wanted, and most important, where he might be. Vengeance was something Master Isao had always cautioned against, especially since yokai could lose themselves to revenge, obsessing over a grudge until it consumed them. But if I ever came face to face with the one who had destroyed my temple, he would come to fear the vengeance of an angry kitsune.
So, Yumeko-chan.
Okame's voice jerked me out of my dark musings. The ronin had dropped alongside me, hands clasped behind his head as we walked together down the path.
Normally, I don't like poking into matters that aren't my business, he began. But I just heard the words demon, oni, and blood mage in the same sentence, and any one of those is enough to keep me awake at night. Also, and stop me if I've missed anything, I just watched a bird disintegrate after I shot it, because someone who can raise dead crows has taken an interest in us because of a scroll. Did I get all that right?
More or less, I frowned a bit. Although, I think he would do more than just bring crows back to life. That would be a very strange skill to have, unless he really loves crows.
Right. So, I think I deserve some sort of explanation, and I know better than to ask he of the scary glowing sword.
He nodded at Tatsumi several paces ahead.
I'd probably get my head lopped off before I could open my mouth. So I'd appreciate if you could tell me what's going on, Yumeko-chan. I faced Gaki, Yurei, and now undead crows. Am I going to have to fight demons any time in the future?
It's possible, I said, and briefly explained what had happened the night the demons had attacked the temple, using the same story I'd told Tatsumi. That Master Isao had sensed a great evil coming and had sent the scroll away before the demons arrived. I told him about the Oni and the Amanjaku and my promise to Master Isao to warn the other temple of the demons, and that I had to find Master Jiro at the Hayate Shrine to discover the location of the Steel Feather Temple. When I was finished, Okame gave me a shrewd look, as if something I said didn't quite make sense.
So, a horde of demons attacks your temple, at the same time Kage-san with a demon-slaying sword shows up.
He mused.
That sounds very convenient. I assume he wasn't there to admire the leaves.
I don't think Tatsumi is one for leaf-watching, Okame-san.
Right.
Okame sighed.
So, what's so special about this scroll? That the Kage Demon Slayer and an entire horde of Jigoku abominations would show up to claim it.
I don't know, I stammered. Master Isao never told me why it was important. Guilt prickled. I felt bad for lying, but it was probably better that the Ronin know as little about the scroll as possible. The last thing I needed was someone else who wanted to summon the dragon. Too many knew about it already.
Huh.
Okame crossed his arms, his expression unusually grim.
So your master Isao sent this scroll away, presumably to another temple, and Kage-san just decided to escort you there, hmm?
No, not really. I asked him to.
And he agreed. The antisocial, don't bother me or I'll kill you Shadow Clan samurai agreed to escort a peasant girl across several territories to a mysterious temple hidden somewhere on the other side of the country.
Yes? The Ronin shook his head and bent closer, lowering his voice.
You don't see what's going on, do you?
He muttered.
He's not taking you to the temple out of the kindness of his heart. He wants the scroll, Yumeko-chan.
Of course he does. Everyone wants the scroll, Okame-san. I could feel the lacquered case again, pressed into my skin under the furoshiki, and had to force myself not to touch the spot where it was hidden. But I promised Master Isao that I would warn the Steel Feather Temple about the demon attack, and I don't think I could make it there on my own, especially if there's a blood mage after us. You've seen how Tatsumi fights. His sword was created to kill demons. He's my best chance of reaching the temple alive.
And what happens when you get there, and he demands the scroll from the monks?
I'm still working on that. He shook his head.
Well, good luck, Yumeko-chan. Personally, I don't know what would be scarier, an oni or an angry Kage demon slayer. I hope you know what you're doing.
I hoped so as well. The sun began to set while we were still several miles from the next town. As the shadows grew long and the first stars began to appear, I quickened my pace to walk alongside Tatsumi.
It's getting late, Tatsumi-san. Shouldn't we be looking for a place to spend the night?
Sagimura isn't far, he answered. If we don't stop, we'll reach it before the hour of the boar.
He paused a moment before adding,
I'd rather sleep in a village tonight than out in the open.
I shivered, so he felt it too. The sensation of danger, of eyes on us wherever we went. In fact, the closer we drew to Sagimura, the more uneasy I felt. Not only that something was watching us, but that something was coming, chasing us, stalking us. And if Tatsumi didn't want to stay out in the open, then whatever was out there was something I did not want to meet. The moon was a full silver disk overhead when the road took us over a bridge that spanned the Hotaru River. On the other side, over the distant rice paddies, I could just catch the glimmers of light that came from Sagimura. There was just one problem. A stranger stood in the center of the bridge, the moonlight blazing down on him, a shining katana held loosely at his side.
23. The Demon on the Bridge.
Oni no Mikoto, Yumeko whispered.
The swordsman waited for us in the center of the bridge, unmoving as a statue. I didn't know what I was expecting of the demon prince, but it wasn't the tall, almost elegant figure in front of us. He wore dark blue hakama trousers and sandals, but his chest was bare, lean muscles exposed to the moonlight. Long white hair, not uncommon in Taiyo lands, fell unbound past his waist. A white and red oni mask covered his face, its mouth split into a wide, tusk-bearing grin, curved horns spiking up from its forehead. His sword glimmered at his side, curved and lethal.
Well, shit, Okame muttered. It really is Oni no Mikoto, or someone doing their damnedest to imitate the legend. Good thing I'm not impressed by legends, or that silly code of honor. Don't worry, Kage-san, he said, grinning back at me. I'll take care of this.
In one smooth motion, he drew back his string and loosed an arrow at the figure on the bridge. I watched, knowing the Ronin was a near-perfect shot, wondering if the next thing I saw would be the stranger, toppling backward with an arrow jutting from his chest. Oni no Mikoto didn't move. He didn't dive out of the way or take a step back. His sword flicked up, a blink of silver in the darkness, and knocked the dart aside. The arrow clattered against the rails before dropping into the river.
Sukoi!
This from Yumeko, her voice awed.
That was very fast.
The Ronin blew out a soft breath.
Yeah,
he said, sounding half annoyed, half intimidated.
That confirms it, then. We need to find another bridge.
There is no other bridge. I stared at Oni no Mikoto, impatient. The demon prince regarded us in silence, seemingly unconcerned that he had just been shot at. I could sense his contemplation, the weight of his gaze regarding each of us in turn. Then, that long, gleaming blade rose and pointed, very deliberately, at me, before lowering to his side again. Okame snorted.
Looks like you've just been challenged, Kage-san. Better you than me, though, like I said, I don't have to worry about honor and fair fights. I suppose you'll be accepting the duel, then. Wouldn't want to risk dishonor to, well, I guess everything, really. Yourself, your clan, your children, your livestock, the road you're traveling, the sandals on your feet, the rice balls in your pack.
Really? The rice balls, too? Yumiko frowned at him. I didn't know you could dishonor your food.
Everything can be dishonored, Yumiko-chan. Just ask any samurai. Of course, they'd probably cut off your head for asking such a dishonorable question.
Enough! Oni no Mikoto spoke. His voice was calm and smooth, and had a cultured edge that caught my attention. Definitely not a vagabond ronin or bandit. He almost sounded like Kage Masao, the well-bred courtier and advisor to Lady Hansho. Kage-san, the demon prince continued, if it wasn't clear before, I challenge you to a duel to prove whose skill is superior. If you wish to cross, you must defeat me first. You can, of course, turn around and leave without consequence. I have no interest in cowards. Kamigoroshi flared, eager and almost gleeful. I ignored the exciting pulsing of the sword and gestured at Yumeko and the Ronin a few paces away.
What of my companions?
The girl may cross if she chooses. The Ronin... I sensed his gaze shift under the mask, his voice taking on the faintest edge. I would prefer he stayed within my sight, if only to prevent an arrow in my back once he crosses the bridge. For any samurai, a statement like that would be an unforgivable insult, implying that he would strike from behind like a coward, but the Ronin only shrugged.
Don't worry about me.
The Ronin put away his bow and settled against the railing.
There's no way I would miss this. I'm only disappointed there's no gambling hall to place bets. I'd walk out of here a rich man.
I could almost feel the disdain coming from the masked stranger across from me. Gambling, especially on another's life, was something criminals, merchants, and pit crowds partook in, not respectable samurai. Yumeko, I said, finding the girl hovering close to the railing. You should leave. Sagimura is on the other side of the bridge. Find an inn and wait for us there. We shouldn't be long.
What? I'm not going anywhere.
Yumiko glared at Oni no Mikoto, then turned to me, her eyes conflicted.
This duel, she began. It's to the death, isn't it?
I looked at my opponent. There were several kinds of duels. Some used bokken, wooden practice swords to prove who was stronger without bloodshed. Some duels were to first blood, and though they could be deadly, often ended without fatalities. Among skilled samurai, iaijutsu duels were favored, where two swordsmen stood an arm's length apart with their swords sheathed, and the first to move, draw his blade, and cut his opponent was the winner of the match. They, too, could be deadly, but death was not a foregone conclusion.
"Yes," Oni no Mikoto said calmly, "as I am the challenger, I will allow you to choose the type of duel you prefer, be it iaijutsu or something else. But there will be no first blood, no quarter given, and no surrender. This will be to the death. Only one of us will cross this bridge tonight, unless you wish to turn around and go back."
"Why?" Yumeko asked. "What do you gain from killing people? Are you really a demon?"
"A demon?"
The masked stranger sounded taken aback. He stared at her, then shook his head.
"You wouldn't understand," he told her gently. "Those with no passion can never comprehend the drive for perfection. I am no demon. I am merely an artist who, for years, had no canvas to practice upon. I dedicated my life to sword play, to perfecting the balance between myself and the blade. But dueling with wooden swords or being forced to stop at first blood, that is like painting a picture with only half the colors. The safe duels I fought hobbled me and told me nothing. The only way to truly test my skills is to fight with no limitations. Only then will I know if I have achieved perfection."
"But you kill people," Yumeko said. "You lurk on bridges and ambush travelers just to prove that you're better at swordplay. Why?"
"Lurk?"
The stranger sounded amused.
"What a distasteful image. Were you a man, I would ask you to back up your insult with steel. Oni no Mikoto does not lurk. I challenge, and then I offer a clear choice. Anyone can refuse the duel. There have been several who have recognized a superior opponent and have declined the challenge, at no loss of honor to themselves. I do not wish to fight those who are not worthy. Acknowledging they are outmatched saves me valuable time, which I appreciate. All too often, I find my opponents are boastful and overconfident, and have a much higher opinion of themselves than their skills account for. I hope that is not the case here."
"So, Kage-san," that pale oni mask turned back to me, "I humbly await your answer. Will you, as several have done before you, turn around and leave? Or will you face Oni no Mikoto with honor and cross swords with him tonight?"
"Neither." I could sense his surprise, even though the demon mask gave nothing away. The Ronin was mistaken. Ideals of honor and glory meant very little to me. I had no pride to stand on, no loss of face to endure. Despite appearances, I wasn't samurai. I was a kage shinobi, one who struck from the shadows, who used misdirection and tricks to best my foes. Shinobi were already seen as dishonorable assassins, because true bushi faced their enemies head-on and did not stoop to skulking in the dark. I had my personal honor and followed the code of the Shadow Clan, but bushido wasn't as important as completing my mission at any cost. If I could have avoided this battle, I would have. But Oni no Mikoto was an obstacle, and it would take too much time to find a path around. "I would rather not fight here," I told him, feeling Hakaimono rise up like a blood-filled typhoon. "But you're in my way, and I have a mission to complete. I'm not going to cross blades with you. I'm going to cut a path right through you to the other side."
"Excellent!"
Oni no Mikoto sounded ecstatic.
"You honor me with your acceptance. Come then, Kage-san. Let us see whose skills are sharper."
"Yumeko,"
I said, not taking my eyes from my opponent. Get back. This is my fight, understand? Don't try to interfere. From the corner of my eye, I saw her take a step toward me.
Don't die, she ordered quietly. You promised to take me to the Steel Feather Temple. It would be very rude to break your promise by getting killed, Tatsumi-san.
I'm not going to die, I told her. Within, Hakaimono was growing stronger, a surging tide of violence and bloodlust.
Go,
I repeated. Get to safety. This will be over soon.
The Ronin pushed himself off the railing.
This should be interesting.